Hello and welcome to the Fishing Guide Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Wigman. Gary Klein is here. We're pretty excited. We're at Bass Pro Shop. Lots of things that are going on. Gary, there's a lot of things that you're involved. What did you just do yesterday?
Well, I tell you, you know this is our key event. I mean, this is our showcase. Anglers worked hard to qualify for it. Here we are on Table Rock. Yep. Table Rock Lake has a lot of history in the bass fishing world. Yep. So it's really cool to have a water body like this close to Springfield, close to Bass Pro Shops, yep, where we can actually host our event. And during the course of the week, there's a lot going on. Yesterday, I had the opportunity with our Major League Fishing Fisheries Management Division,
right,
to actually present an $11,000 check.
Wow.
To an organization that's actually right here in this area, and it's called the James River Basin Partnership.
Okay.
And what they do is basically make sure that Table Rock Lake is, you know, good water quality, et cetera, et cetera. So they have a program that they've started several years ago, and it's actually all of the homeowners in the basin, yes, region that have septic tanks, they will come and pump your septic tank out.
Wow.
At no charge to use. So it's really been a cool thing. I think so far they've done like 6,500 septic tanks. And what they're trying to do is control the nutrients that are being washed into,
yes,
Table Rock Lake.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's a cool program.
And the history of Bass Pro Shop and everything being here. So we have to highlight, because they're inducting Don Avino into, yeah, the Bass Fishing Hall of Fame. And you know Don, and you've had some experiences with Don. And so we gotta find some stuff. We got to hear, because I feel like if we don't, if we don't talk about it, then people will lose that history, the fishing history, and some of that are gold nuggets, you know?
Well, exactly. You know, that's one of the really cool things about this sport. It's evolving. And that's one of the opportunities that I had at a very young age. I couldn't see into the future,
right,
but I started competitive angling when I was 15 years old, graduated, wow, high school, basically came out and started fishing the BASS circuit in 1979. Well, that was my journey, and I'm, right, still out here competing. I love it. I got a passion for fishing.
Uh-huh.
But on the backside of that, with all my experience on the water, I've also learned that I want to make sure that our water bodies are as good or better,
right,
than they were for me when I was fishing. We have all these new young anglers that are getting involved in the sport, and that's one thing that we're not doing in this country is building new water bodies.
Right.
So it's important for us to preserve and make sure that our fisheries stay strong. But anyhow, on a different subject, as I was in my journey,
yes,
let's call it a journey,
yeah,
I was a young angler. I was like a sponge.
Right.
I was absorbing everything, and I had the opportunity at a very young age to meet D. Thomas.
Wow.
D. Thomas was a mentor of mine. I spent a lot of time in the boat with D. I was like the son that D did not have.
Wow.
And D has been inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And D was unable to make it, so I actually had the opportunity to,
really,
accept his award,
uh-huh,
here at the museum here in Springfield. So that was definitely an honor on my behalf. There was a couple of people that really influenced me, and another one was Don Avino.
Right.
Don Avino's fishing style was totally different than D. Thomas's. D. Thomas was heavy line, in your face,
pitching,
real close targets, and nobody knew those fish existed that shallow.
Right.
So he had a whole population of fish to fish shallow that were unmolested.
Wow.
Well, Avino developed a finesse style of fishing with light line, and, yep, his little lures.
Uh-huh.
But Don got really good at catching, we didn't know it at the time, but, suspended,
right,
fish and offshore fish. Don really excelled with his techniques when the water was real clear. You were fishing for,
yeah,
fish that what I call visual fish.
Uh-huh.
So your presentation is key, and the way you work the bait is key to get, pull the fish to get to the bait. And Don really perfected that. The time I spent in the boat with Don, we were shaking what back then he called them his doodle worms.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
yep,
the little custom poured doodle,
yes,
worms. In fact, Lake Lanier, 1985, I won my second BASS tournament on,
really,
Don's doodle worm. 1988, right here in Bull Shoals.
Yeah.
I won, I think it was my third or fourth BASS tournament on Don's Doodleworm.
Really?
And then in 1988, I won the U.S. Open on Lake Mead on Don's Doodleworm. So wow. I took his technique and his style and kind of modified it for me as an angler.
Uh-huh.
Don always fished his techniques with bait cast.
Really?
Yeah.
And wow.
I prefer a spinning rod. Uh-huh. And so I perfected it with a spinning rod, where Don perfected it with a bait casting rod. And that's right. One really cool thing about our sport is that there's no right way, there's no wrong way to do anything. It should be your way.
Right.
And when you read, you watch all the videos, watch all the live footage, you see an angler using a lure with a certain presentation, and then you go out and try to work and try to maybe learn how to skip.
Uh-huh.
But because Andy Montgomery skips with a 7.3 medium heavy rod, you may end up more comfortable with a 7.1,
uh-huh.
just because we're all built different.
Right.
Length of arm, et cetera, et cetera. But the angler has to work to learn what's best for him. It's just like golf. I mean, right. what set of clubs, length, and all that bit works for you? Same thing in fishing. Uh-huh. So I just took what I learned from D,
right.
what I learned from Don. And I had another individual that was light line, Rich Forehand, who I grew up with.
Oh.
I took all of their styles and kind of adapted them for me.
Right.
And worked on what worked for me. But anyhow, not only did Don help me as a young angler understanding light line presentations in clear water, but Don was also very good at reading offshore structure with what we called units. And back then, everybody used the Lowrance flasher units.
Right.
But Don was really good at metering around, just like Mike Folkstad, another West Coast angler who's also been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Great, great guy. I've always called him Mikey. I still call him Mikey. Uh-huh. I met Mike when I was 15.
Wow.
I think I met Don when I was 16.
Right.
You know, that's how far back it goes. I'm now 68.
Right.
So, you know, I want to age myself, but, you know, that's reality of it. But Don brought to the sport of bass fishing a very unique style that helped people understand light line. Like when I first came out here and started fishing a spinning rod, which I grew up with in California, everybody called a sissy rod.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah, I had a 6-pound test line. Well, when I started beating them, they started realizing that there's some merit to light line, open water, clear water, deep, suspended fish.
Uh-huh. And that's the challenge. And now the window's open, the door's open, and Forward Facing is now showing what, like, they had kind of figured out already, but with 2D. And flashers.
Exactly, yeah. Our forward imaging is the same thing that we've had forever. It's just we've looked at it vertical.
Uh-huh.
And now we have the ability to look forward.
Right.
And in looking forward with the electronics that we have today, just because you, the angler, go out and spend whatever you're going to spend and you get the latest, greatest, and you got everything hooked up right, still doesn't mean you're going to catch fish. You, the angler, have to learn or understand what you're looking at on the screen, understand how the fish are reacting, and start building a toolbox for that style of fishing. And that's one of the things I've always heard, you know, there's a lot of controversy, you know, forward facing, yada, yada, yada. For example, I had an outdoor writer several years ago contact me in the state of Texas, which is where I live. And he was doing an article on why forward facing is allowing all these share lunkers to be caught.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, every year in the state of Texas, we catch 20, 25 share lunkers. A share lunker is a fish over 13 that's caught January, February, or March.
Yep.
That's the share lunker program. But in the state of Texas, I believe the count now is 82 water bodies have produced a share lunker.
Really?
And every year there's a new water body. Well, the first thing he was really trying to go at the angle that forward facing is letting the guy, you know, allowing the guys to catch these fish. And I stopped him there, cold in his tracks, and I said, well, first of all, if the fish didn't exist in that water body, then you're not going to catch them. You know, you can't catch what doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Yes, forward imaging has taught the angler more about fish habits, how they migrate.
Right.
Because it was always before when we could only see vertical, it seemed like all of our great water bodies, I mean, you go to Guntersville, you go to Rayburn, you go to Toledo Bend, all the great fisheries that we have across the country, and it was always, man, in the springtime, man, it takes 28-pound bag, 30-pound bag to win. But then you get into summer, you start getting into the fall, and the guys are catching 12 pounds to win. And we always thought, you know, where did these fish go? And, of course, it was the beginning of the Alabama rig. Alabama rig started teaching us that these fish suspend in open water. But now with the forward imaging technology, we can see them. Which makes the angler a little bit more efficient at making good presentations to fish. We're just not kind of, you know, our time is a little bit more persistent now, or, you know, precise when we make the presentations. But the point I was going to make is that you have many anglers across this country that are like me. I mean, we were raised fishing streams and farm ponds and yada, yada, yada. And for years, we've been building a tackle box. Based on the sun's up, the sun's down, it's cloudy, it's windy, the water's clear, the water's dirty, I'm fishing for smallmouth or I'm fishing for spotted bass or largemouth. So that's what we do when we practice and when we're fishing all the time. We start building confidence in certain lures. And all of a sudden, I've got a toolbox that when the wind's blowing and I'm going to pick a square bill up, I've got my square bill because I know that's the tool that's going to catch fish. Now we have this forward imaging. And with forward imaging, a lot of anglers in my position have a toolbox built, but it's not for forward facing. So you see a lot of the young anglers that are coming into the sport that have literally have been here for 2 years, 3 years. Most of them have made it through the ranks through college, high school, college, which that's a pretty cool program. And now we have college anglers that have maybe 3 years under their belt, and you're watching them compete at the highest levels because of their experience with forward facing, but yet they've built their toolbox based on the screen. So what they see and how fish react, they've got another lure or another presentation to tie on and catch those fish. So that is very fascinating to me. You know, Boyd and I were talking about it the other night. You know, we talk about it all the time. But how hard can it be to really perfect forward facing because these young anglers are learning it in 2 or 3 years? You know, so it's like, hey, guys, you know, forget about old school and just open up your minds, embrace this technology and start developing techniques that you can use to catch fish. Cause it's not,
it all comes down to technique, using it too at the same
it comes
time,
down because to the angler and their confidence, you know, cause all these fish don't get caught on a jig head minnow.
And
forward facing. I mean, I watch a lot of the guys that are really good at it. You see a lot of plastics being used on the bottom, a jig. We got a couple guys on the circuit. That's all they do is forward face with a big jig. And they catch a lot.
But only for a certain number of hours now. Regulations coming in, which is good.
Well, but again, though, Brad, is the point that you were making, we were talking about earlier, that our sport is evolving. From where we used to be in the 70s or the early, or the 60s when Ray kind of got this competitive deal going to where we are today, and it's going to continue to evolve. But because it's evolving, I will say our fisheries today, majority of them across the country, are better today than they were 20 years ago. We have more fish, we have better quality fish, we have numbers to catch. So fishing is really good. And the reason for that is we have all the state agencies now that are working real hard on their water bodies.
Major League Fishing's helping cleaning things up.
We do mossback habitat builds all across the country. I don't know, I think we've done them in 12 states, and I don't know how many we've done so far since our existence. So, you know, we're working real hard to make it better, keep it good, because fishing is such a great sport. I mean, for, you know, families to get out, it's the adventure. I mean, it's just like growing up. I mean, take a little kid out there and let him watch his bobber go under. I mean, that right there is the, oh, that's the beginning of the future. So, you know, bass fishing is bright. We got a great future ahead of us. It's a it's a passion that a lot of us get. And it never goes away. It just gets stronger. I have more of a desire to fish now than I did when I was 15. I love to fish all the time. I get about...
Someone's going to track you down if you try and go fishing all the time, aren't they?
I'm always on the water. Because I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to understand. And I'm one of those anglers that I've never fully committed on forward facing. I don't wake up in the morning and say, okay, that's what I'm going to do. But here was the thing that I was leading up to about our league. You have some leagues that disallow it.
Right.
You have some leagues that disallow it sometimes and allow it sometimes. Well, if you look at the format of Major League Fishing.
Right.
I designed it. It came out of my head.
Right.
And it was so easy for me because my history was BASS.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I grew up with Ray Scott. Uh-huh. And I was one of the first 20-year-old kids to come out from California, et cetera. I've qualified for 30 of the Bassmasters Classic.
Wow.
A couple of Angler of the Years. So that was my environment. And if you take a look at the format that we have with Major League Fishing, I did away with everything I didn't like about conventional tournaments. Blast off.
Right.
Just think about it, man. You work your rear off all day long, and all of a sudden, the last hour and a half, you finally get in an area or you figure out the bite. And you're looking at your watch going, man, I got a 35-minute ride back.
Uh-huh.
I did away with that. Play the game out there on the water body. Plus, catchway release, that's the uh-huh. future of our reservoirs.
Yes, that's right.
And our fisheries, we're not moving populations of fish around. And then the other part that I did not like is that during competition, competitive anglers cannot make a decision. In other words, Major League, or they're disqualified.
Right.
So in Major League Fishing, after I wrote the format, I went back and wrote the rules, and it was so easy because if you have a fish hung up in a bush, why can't you go get it?
Right.
That's a caught fish. You can uh-huh. go get it. Yeah, you're going to get a five-minute time penalty because everything is based on the clock.
Right.
But I gave the angler the option to make their own decisions. If you want to break him off and not weigh him in, that's your decision.
Right.
But that's what we did with forward facing. And it didn't come easy. I mean, we were trying to run all the scenarios, how we could best adapt it into our format of competition. And again, as you see on the Bass Pro Tour, on the Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit,
right.
that we have given the angler the option on when to use it, if you want to use it at all. So that right there becomes another strategy part of the game that they're playing. And
right.
you'll see a lot of anglers that will never use it. You see anglers that will use it first thing in the morning.
Right.
And then they'll go without it for two periods.
Right.
So that in Tackle Warehouse, we have a three-hour window.
Yep.
Any time in the day, we don't fish periods at Tackle Warehouse.
Right.
But any time during the day, you can turn your forward facing on for a three-hour window. If you choose to use
right.
it. So I think that we really came out as a league on top. I know
right.
our anglers that compete love it because it's strategy.
Yes.
And I mean, the more strategy, and we're allowing the angler to make their own decision.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. I got to know, because I envision that your tackle box, when you had Don, when you were around with Don Avino, you had a little tackle box that
yep.
was all his stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is
yeah.
that right?
Glass, oh, yeah, I still
tell
have
us,
it. I still
glass
have it today.
Beads. What did that consist of, the doodle sock?
Well, it is the technique
okay.
that, let me just explain it.
Okay.
Don Ivino's key bait was a 4-inch hand-poured worm.
Okay.
But it was more like a triple layered. Because you're fishing clear water for sight fish.
Right.
So he fished a lot of translucent colors. But Don Ivino is the one that started, you know, a brown top, blue side, pearl
oh.
belly. Those were all Don Ivino's colors.
Uh-huh.
In fact, in 85, when I won the BASS tournament on Lanier
uh-huh.
in Georgia,
right.
the final day when I stepped off stage, Ed Chambers was standing there.
Oh, wow.
And Ed and I have always been great friends. He's a great
uh-huh.
man, did a lot for the sport with
yep.
his Zoom bait company. And he asked me, he said, what's this doodle worm? So I went to my boat and I gave him samples of all of Don's colors.
Right.
So he could see how everything was layered out. And then Zoom came out with their custom type worms.
Right.
One of Don's worms was a straight tail worm.
Okay.
Now, he did have a little curly tail on some of his worms,
right.
but I preferred to fish the straight tail.
Right.
With a 3/16 lead sinker. We didn't have tungsten back there. And just
right.
a 3/16, which is kind of like a long tapered sinker.
Right.
Okay. That was his deal. And he threw it on 6-pound test line. And back then, I always fished Berkeley 6-pound XT.
Right.
We didn't have any fluorocarbon or anything like that. But here was... This is what I was doing when I won Lanier,
Okay.
When I won Ball Shoals and when I won the U.S. Open. Same rod, same worm, same weight, same technique. And you have to go to a swimming pool to play with it.
Yeah.
But again, remember, I'm dealing with fish that can see.
Uh-huh.
Clean water is when that technique right. works really good. So when I make a presentation, I have a wide draw range for the okay. fish. If you cast a sinker in a plastic out and you let it land on a slack line, that's why I like spinning rod. So uh-huh. when I throw it, I would throw it and let it go goosh. Well, the sinker slips about that far away from the worm.
Okay.
So now in the water, again, I'm dealing with visual fish. As it's sinking, the sinker is away from the worm
uh-huh.
and it's falling vertical.
Right.
But it looks like this is chasing this.
I gotcha.
So now I have like a double bait presentation. Okay, so is this sliding, you know, about that far away in the right. water column if I throw to a deep boat dock, which I won Lanier on deep boat docks.
Yeah.
Or like Bull Shoals was open water in 35 to 45 feet of yeah. water. The fish were out. And when I won the U.S. Open, all those fish were 45 suspended over 100.
Right.
But what I was doing is I was giving them a directional change that triggered the strike. No different than if you watch KVD with a crankbait. He right. never just reels it. He's always jerking his rod tip and pulling. And what Kevin is doing directional changes.
Uh-huh.
You know, he'll speed it up, stop, kick it off to the side, and that'll trigger the strike.
Right.
And if you stop and think about most lures that we use as anglers, and when we experience a bite, like with a crankbait or a spinner bait
yep.
or a buzz, anything, yep. you click or you bang, that's that directional change. And anytime in Mother Nature something looks wounded, it usually gets eaten because that's right. like easy prey. Yep. Well, that's what I was doing with the Don uh-huh. Ivino Doodle Rig, is I'd cast it out and let it fall. This is chasing this.
Yeah.
And then when I get either at a depth or I got to where I thought the fish had seen it long enough,
right.
I'd flip the bill and I'd hold my rod tip up. And when I held my rod tip up, this would catch this.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, so my worm now is caught what it was falling. Now when I dump the rod tip, because it's pinned up against the worm, it does a directional change on a turn. You can put a, now guys use a bobber stopper. If you put right. a bobber stopper on a weight in front of a plastic straight tail worm,
yep.
not a curly, and you suck it up tight, like a big Cinco. I fish that a bunch. And you throw it out, when it hits the water, it's going to spiral. It's going to do directional changes on the fall.
Right.
But if I pull my bobber stopper up and allow about that much away from the worm, it's going to fall straight.
Uh-huh.
So when you suck it up, it makes it plain. That's all I was doing. I was using the worm and the sinker as a double rig, but I was, whenever I got to the depth I thought the fish were, then I lift my rod tip up and let the worm catch a sinker, and then I drop the rod tip down and shake it like crazy, and it would just do a side spiral, and usually your line would just go slack.
You better be careful, given like Drew Gill or Jacob Wheeler, they'll be studying this, and they'll be out there.
Those guys are so good.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time with Drew Gill
uh-huh.
Ever since he started fishing. He's one of those anglers that's intrigued me because of his upbringing.
Uh-huh.
I've listened to all of his podcasts, and I listen to how he thinks.
Analytic thinker.
Oh, my gosh.
And while he's fishing. So make sure you watch Face Live, because when he talks and tells you what he's doing out there, which is another thing where
yeah.
you put cameras in a boat, and all of a sudden, besides just seeing the person fishing,
yeah.
and not hearing it, all of a sudden you're hearing these guys, and the guys are starting to get better at talking about what they're doing out on
exactly,
the water.
Yes.
So young anglers
yeah.
are learning at the same, or old anglers are learning.
Just anglers, don't age us, okay, Brad. But the cool thing about it is that with our format, especially like the competition that's going on
right.
here at Table Rock, the viewer can actually sit in the boat
yep.
and live that moment. You know, you can yep. watch those guys fish and hear what they're thinking. And that really helps you as an angler, too, because you get to see how they position the boats,
yep.
the casts that they're making, and how much confidence they have in the cast. You know, Drew yep. is an extraordinary angler. And like I said earlier,
yes.
you know, I've spent a lot of time with him in the parking lot. And Drew has honestly answered, in my opinion, every question I've asked him.
Wow.
And the other angler that was like that, that I just had so much respect for was Aaron Martin's.
Wow, yeah.
And Aaron was a friend of everybody's. But Aaron was the type of angler, you know, because back in the beginning, you know, what's a drop shot? Exactly. Well, if you asked Aaron what a drop shot was, he would show you how to tie the knot, the right. hook, here's the weight. Right. Oh, you need some? Here's some. Oh, here, let me give you some worm. Oh, this color
and don't
right
tie that
cool.
knot wrong because oh, yeah. Aaron is going to, like, you're going to have to tie that knot till you get it right.
Yeah. You know, Aaron was yes. was that. And Drew reminds me a lot of Aaron.
Oh, wow.
He's, yeah. he's very analytical about his thought process, but he's very open.
Yep.
I mean, like I said, I've never asked Drew a question that I think he reneged on me. He told yeah. me the truth. So I really appreciate that. And he's a great young angler. He's got a great future.
Oh, yeah. Well, that takes us to Tackle Time. Tackle Time sponsored by Pico Lures. Pico Lures, of course, has a complete line of hard and soft baits. Anything you're trying to catch, including bass or maybe striper, walleye, crappie, they got a lure that you can catch them on at picolures.com. Also, B&M Pole, which is a company that makes rods for catfishing, crappie fishing, trout fishing, any kind of fishing you want to go. They have a rod for that, so check them out at bnmpole.com. Gary, tell us if they want to find out more about conservation and what Major League Fishing is doing, where would they go?
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, if you really want to follow what we're doing, you can go to Major League Fishing's website, go to our fisheries management division, majorleaguefishing.com. Just go down the list and go to our fisheries management division. Or if you want to follow me personally, it's garyklein.com. I mean, I'm pretty easy to find. I love teaching anglers how to become better.
There you go. There you have it. Like I always like to end the show, make sure you keep your hook sharp, your lures in the water.